We're doing Megillah, Rabta Chavchet Amud Alef, and we've been having this discussion of the different rabbis that were questioned, to what do you attribute your longevity? So, Shalut Amidav Rabbi Nechunia Ben Akana, the students asked Rabbi Nechunia Ben Akana, Bamei Rach Tayamin, what do you think caused you to have longevity? Amar Lehem, he said, Mi Amai Lo Nitkabati Beklon Chaveri, I never got honor out of my friend's shame. And the Gemara will explain. And I never went to bed with my friend's curse. Meaning I never went to sleep while a friend of mine was still upset at me. I always made peace before I went to sleep. I used to forego when it came to money. So the Gemara explains. I never took honor in my friend's shame. Ki had Rav Huna, like the story of Rav Huna. You guys remember Rav Huna, right?
He was short and he got the blessing of the silk.
He was blessed with silk because he gave away his belt in order to have wine for Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. So, Rav Huna, Dari Mara Akatve, he was carrying a shovel, some kind of instrument, like a shovel, on his shoulder. At Rav Chana Bar Chanilai, Vekadari Mine. Rav Chana Bar Chanilai came along and wanted to take the shovel to carry it for Rav Huna. Amale, so he said to him, you know, you want to honor me by carrying the shovel for me. If you're accustomed to carrying a shovel in your own town, Dari, then you can honor me by carrying the shovel, because it's not shameful to you. If you, the great rabbi Rav Chana Bar Chanilai, you want to come out of respect and carry the shovel, so I say, wait a second. In your hometown, would you carry a shovel? So if it's not shameful to you, it's just a matter that you want to show honor to Torah, okay. The ilo, but if you're not accustomed to carrying a shovel in your hometown, where you're the rabbi in your hometown, if you don't carry a shovel, I don't want to have honor from something that shames you, that's derogatory to you. Depends on what you do when you're at home. He said, I never went to bed. My bed never received the curse of my friend. Ki had Marzuta, like the story of Marzutra, Kavasalik Lepuye, when he'd go to bed, Amar, he said, Shari Leimare Lechol Mandetzaran. The Gemara says it's the opposite of the way we think. I never went to bed with the curse of my friend, meaning I never went to bed upset at anyone. I never went to bed cursing my friend. Like Marzutra, when he'd go to bed, he'd say, I forgive everyone who hurt me today. Okay, it's a nice thing to do.
Is it like the bracha that we say? The one that's before Hamapur?
That's such a nice thing. You do that every night too. It's a good thing of you. See?
I hope everyone does it so that I'm forgiven for whatever I did.
You want everyone to be on the level of Marzutra and Rav Huna. Okay,
no,
it's a nice thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Understand what I'm telling you, Yehuda. Yeah. When you read a story like this in the Gemara, you have to understand that the halachic implication is that this is the exception.
You're right.
It's not my own opinion. It's the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos in Brachos. Right. And the Mishnah says, Rav Nechunya ben Akona. Oh, we just learned about him. When he'd enter the academy, he'd say a certain prayer. And when he'd leave, he'd say another prayer. So the Rambam says ordinarily that would be a nice story that would not be incumbent upon all of us. The Rambam tells us this concept. If the Gemara tells me that these were exceptional things these people did, then you can't expect other people to do it. I don't have to forgive you when I go to sleep. If I'm a big man like Marzutra, I'm a big man like Rav Huna, okay? But the Rambam says the only reason we do it is because the Talmud quotes a braisa that says, "Bichmisato ma'omer." When he enters the academy, what does he say? So that seems to indicate that that's what everyone should say when they enter the academy, not just what Rav Nechunya ben Akona said when he entered the academy and started learning. You know the prayer I'm talking about. I shouldn't err in my learning. I shouldn't cause others to err. Yeah. Okay. So it's a Rambam Pirush HaMishnayos. Why is this so important? Because we live in a generation of fanatics. People are fanatical about all kinds of things. We have to work on being fanatics towards our fellow man. Fanatics about not hurting other people's feelings. But we're not. We're fanatics about all kinds of silly things. So we're fanatics in other areas, you know, about kashrus, about echsherim, where it's only a matter of money. It's not a matter of someone's feelings or controlling what I say. We're fanatics about all kinds of things, you know. So people say all kinds of fanatical things. And then they quote Gemaras like these that show you that the exceptional people in the generation did certain things. And they say, you see, the Gemara says it's a good thing. Yes, but the very same Gemara is indicating it's an exceptional thing. So I admire anyone who does it. I think it's a correct thing to do.
I expected everyone. Okay. I said I hope everyone does it.
Good, okay.
And also,
I also try to do it, but some nights are harder than others.
Also, is this the source for that bracha? Is that where we get that bracha?
The concept of the bracha, yes. Okay, so he said, Vatran b'mamoni hayiti. I used to forgo when it came to my money. Da'ama omar, because we have the following quote, the rabbi taught, Iyov vatran b'mamono haya. Iyov would forgo his money. How so? She'a menech pruta lechen benim mimamone. He would leave a pruta, he would leave a coin for the storekeeper from his own money. I seem to remember Pshat. I don't see it here, but I seem to remember that Pshat in this, maybe the Gemara in Baba Basra Rashi says that the idea was that when he'd exchange money, so he would take the cost of the exchange. I think that's the idea Rashi says in Baba Basra.
So which
Gemara
is that? Can I exchange with you? Mind to exchange Gemara?
Thank you. This Gemara has the advantage of Musaf Rashi, which is the. They quote the Rashi's commentary from other Masechtos. That's a very good Gemara too. As Likutei Rashi, Musaf Rashi. Okay. If I'm not mistaken, that's what Rashi says over there. I don't see it. Okay. That's what I have in mind for some reason. I don't see it now. Okay, onward. Says the Gemara. Shal Rabbi Kiva et Rabbi Nechunya Gadol. Rabbi Kiva asked Rabbi Nechunya, the giant, the big, the senior Rabbi Nechunya, V'me'erachta yamim. What do you attribute your longevity to? So, Rabbi Nechunya had servants standing there, and they thought that Rabbi Akiva was saying, "Old man, why are you still around?" So, Atu Gavzai, his servants came, his eunuchs came, Ekamachule, they started beating up Rabbi Akiva. Saligati v'reishat edikna. So Rabbi Akiva, he was no wimp. He ran, climbed up a palm tree. Amale. So from the top of the palm tree, he called down, Rebbe, im ne'emar kivis, nama ne'emar echad. The verse says, you take one sheep, you do it in the morning. Well, once it says you take a sheep, obviously I understand it's one sheep. The word kivis means one. Kvasim means many. Why does that say kivis and echad? So once he threw down a bomb question, Amalu tzubam rabananu shavku. He said, so he's a sharp student, let him go. This isn't a bum, this isn't someone who's coming here just to be an annoyance, to say, old man, why are you still around? Let him go. So his servants, Rabbi Nechunya's servants pulled back, and Rabbi Kiva climbed down the tree. Amale, then Rabbi Nechunya explained to him, echad miyuchad shebedro. It says one to indicate one which is unique. The unique one in the flock, you take the good one from the flock to bring as a sacrifice. And then he said, Amale, and he said, now I'll explain it to you. Why do I think I got longevity? Miyamaylo kibalti matanot. I never received gifts. Velo amati al midotai. Oh, so there's another one. People read this, and you'll see the Gemara expands on this a little bit. And so they say, I don't want gifts from anyone. Very good. Are you Rabbi Nechunya Gadol? You know, he was a unique person in his generation. No one's saying this isn't a fine trait. Okay, there are many fine traits here. So there was once a person who put a sign at his wedding. No gifts allowed. What's wrong with you? Are you Rabbi Nachman HaGadol? The whole world accepts gifts. He doesn't want to accept gifts. Okay, fine. You know, maybe he is. Maybe he's a giant. Okay. So he, Rabbi Nachman HaGadol, he was a big man. He said, you know, I never accepted gifts. V'lo amati al midotai. And I never insisted on being equals with people. Meaning, if someone hurt me, I never insisted on hurting him back. I never said, you know, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That's called amati al midotai, to be insistent that you'll get what you deserve. Vatran b'mamoni hayiti, same idea. I used to forgo when it came to my money. So the Gemara expands. Lo kibalti matanot. I didn't accept gifts. Ki had Rabbi Elazar. Ki abu mishadri le matanot mi bein nasi alo aveshakil. When Rabbi Elazar would get gifts from the house of the nasi, he wouldn't accept gifts. Ki abu mazmin ilay lo aveazil. They'd send him invitations. Come join us. We have steak. Join us for lunch. Rabbi Elazar would say no thanks. He didn't go. Amaluhu lo nicha lechu dechye. He'd say to them, you don't want me to live. Dichtiv, the verse says in Mishlei, Sone matanot yichyeh. He who waits gifts will live. So I want to live. That's why I'm not accepting your gifts. Okay. So you see, big people live like that. Rabbi Zera kabu mashadu le mi beinasi alo ave shakil. When they'd send gifts to Rabbi Zera from the house of the Nasi, he wouldn't take it. Kabu mizamne le azil. But when they'd invite him, he would go. Amar, he said, I'm honoring them. They're not honoring me. If I'm going to join their meal, it yakuri dim it yakribi. They get honor from the fact that I joined their meal. You know, if the chief rabbi comes to your wedding, everyone says, psh, he came to your wedding. You know, he comes to your house for a meal. Everyone says, oh, you must be a very important person. Chief rabbi comes to your house for a meal. So that's why Rabbi Zera said, if the Nazi is inviting me for a meal, okay, I'll go, I'll honor him. Because there he said, I'm not the one getting the favor, he is. Yeah.
Every time they say, I never did this or this, sounds like they're saying that they never did it like their whole life, even before they developed into the giants that they were.
I think it means from the time that they were mature adults. You know, when a kid is 5, of course he's accepting gifts.
Right.
Okay.
How do these rabbis know the source of their longevity?
Oh, so you'll notice, I translated it to what do you attribute, what do you think? And I said that based on Tosfos Sha'alu, the Tosfos we saw yesterday, that Tosfos seems to say that they thought, you know, these are the things that I did exceptionally. All my friends, they died. Why did I live? What did I do different than my friends? They attributed it to this. But from my rabbis, I got the impression that they didn't agree with my understanding of this Gemara. One of my teachers brought this Gemara up with me about a few weeks ago. If we weren't short on time, I'd tell you the whole context of the conversation, but we could discuss it after class. And from them I understood that this teacher of mine seemed to understand the Gemara, that they were such giants they could know, that they knew to what to attribute their longevity. But I have to say that in my humble opinion, Tosfos seems to indicate otherwise. Tosfos seems to say this is what they thought.
Ravuna said that you will never do to another person what you got from that person. So it's like they're rich against someone. That's sort of the right. So how can a Rav say that he will not perform any?
That's a very, very good question. That's a really good question. So if we have time after class, we'll look into it, okay? That's a very good question. You know, a good question deserves another good question. How come King David takes pride and says, "In gamalti sholemi ra"? Did I ever give back bad to those who did good to me? That's something to be proud of. Okay. Just something to think about. You're asking me a question, I'll ask you a question.
What was that pride?
By King David? I don't know if you could say pride when you're talking to God. You know, a person on King David's stature, I don't think the concept of pride exists in conversation with God. I don't think so. but the, you know, I don't have a proof for what I'm saying.
Context, what you're saying.
Look up the pasuk. Right now we're doing Mar Megillah. I can't do that now. I don't remember offhand. I'm sorry. Email me. I'll email it back to you. No. It's in Psalms. So email me. There's a chance. I'll email it back. Back to the Gemara. Velo amati al midotai. I wasn't insistent to pay back people for how they treated me. Dama Rava, because Rava taught. Kol ma'avir al midotav. Whoever is willing to forgo being a stickler with other people, ma'avirin mimenu kol pshav. So then in heaven they remove all one's sins. Shene'emar noseh avon ve'over al pesha. Lemi noseh avon, lemi shover al pesha. We derive from this verse that God's willing to forgo sin for those who forgo serious unfair treatment. So I think you have the answer to your question really right here. You know, you hire a worker. You're paying the worker to paint your apartment. He doesn't do a good job. Technically, that's pesha, that's ridiculous. Why should I pay him the full price? Come here and fix what you did and then we'll talk. So he said, you know, I'll forgo it. He didn't have to forgo it. He could have said, you know, that's not right. You harmed me. You did a bad job painting my apartment. I'll pay you full price. You come here and fix what you did. No. I'm willing to forgo. The idea here is that it's issues that I don't have to forgo. He's not right. He's hurting me. I don't have to forgo that. What? It's not required. That's why it's something to take pride in. That's why God says, I will forgo a person's sins if he forgoes others' sins towards him. But it's an idea of, it's areas where I don't have to forgo it. Yeah. Shal Rebbe, if Rebbe Yeshua ben Kocha. Rebbe asked Rebbe Yeshua, the son of Rebbe Akiva, Tamei erachta yamim. To what do you attribute your longevity? Amale katzta bechayai. Said, what? You hate the fact that I'm living? Amalo Rebbe Torah, vililmod ani tzarich. So Rebbe said, Rabbi, it's Torah. I have to learn from you. That's why I'm asking. Amale, he said, Miamai lo nistakalti bidmut adam rasha. He said, I never looked at the countenance of a wicked person. Damar Rabbi Yochanan, for Rabbi Yochanan taught, Asul Adam Nistakel B'Tzelem Dmut Adam Rasha. It's forbidden to look at the figure of a wicked person. The idea here is to take a good look. What does Ahmad Jidan look like? What does Arafat look like? Just to see him? Okay, you see him. The idea here is don't take a good look at him. Shneimar, as the verse says, Lulei Pnei Yoshafat Mer Yudan Ninose, Imavit Elecha Vimereka. That the prophet tells the king of Israel, he says to him, if not for the fact of Yehoshaphat, Elisha says to Yehoram, the son of Ahab, he says to him, if not for the fact that Yehoshaphat is here, I wouldn't even look at you. Rabbi Eliezer says, if you look at wicked people, so that causes one's eyes to dim. Shneimar, the verse says, the verse says, as Yitzchak aged, his eyes dimmed from seeing. Because he used to take a good look at his dear son Esav, the wicked. That's what caused his eyes to dim. The Gemara says, is that really the cause for his eyes dimming? The Amar Bitzchak, didn't Rabbi Yitzchak teach us that there was a different cause for Yitzchak's eyes dimming? He taught us, never take the curse of even a simple person lightly. Avimelech cursed Sarah, and you see that his curse came true in her seed. Shneimar, as the verse says, when Avimelech releases Sarah, he tells her, I'll give you all these gifts. Let that be a cover for your eyes. So the simple understanding is, let it be a cover for your shame. You know, you were abducted by the king. People will say, why'd the king let her go? Obviously, he realized she's not as good as we thought she was. So I'll give you all these gifts. And then it'll be a cover for, you'll turn the other way, so to speak. It'll cover your eyes. But really, he meant the curse. It was like, you know, you guys did me one over, Avimelech was saying. And he said, let this really cover up your eyes. And he had in mind a curse. I wish you'd be blinded by these gifts I gave you. And ultimately, his curse came true. She wasn't blinded, but her seed, her offspring, Yitzchak was. The Gemara says, you're right. It's not one of these points, but the two together caused Yitzchak to be blind. The fact that he took a good look of his son Esav, the wicked, and the curse of Avimelech. Rava Amar Mehocha. Rava says the source for this concept is here. It says in the Pasuk, Set Pnei Rasha Lo Tov. It's not good to take the face of the wicked, to uplift the face of the wicked. So the idea here is don't take a good look at him. Bishat Tirato Amale Rebbe Barcheni. Rabbi Yeshua, the son of Rabbi Akiva, was passing away, and Rabbi said to him, bless me, Rabbi, bless me. Amale said to him, Yiratzon Shetagia Lechatzi Yamai. He said to him, I wish you, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, that you live half my days. So that's an interesting blessing. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha lived a very long life. But why is he wishing Rabbi that he should reach half his days? Velekulu lo, and he shouldn't reach the full days of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. So Rabbi was in shock. Rabbi, that, why shouldn't I live as long as you did? Amar lo abayim acharecha beima yiru. He said to him, what about your children? They'll never run the show. They'll never be the Nassim. You want your children to be cattle drivers? They need a job too. You can't live such a long life so that your kids never get to never get to run the show. Okay, this needs understanding, right? Is this a blessing? Is this a curse? A person, does a person have to say, let me leave the scene so my kids take over? Avua bari u'meniminin bari. Avua and Menimin, the son of Kuti. One said, good things should come to me. I never looked at a Kuti, which over here means a pagan. Never looked at them. I never took a good look at them. Another one said, you know, good things should come to me because I never took on a partnership with a pagan. And this is quoted in Halacha. Don't take a partnership with someone who when push comes to shove, you have a misunderstanding in business and he takes you to court, he demands you to vow, to take a vow, and in court they'll say, do you solemnly swear to say the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you, right? And they make you put your hand on a Christian, what they call Bible. So you're taking a vow and you're giving credence to something that's prohibited. So the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim, after the laws of the morning and davening in shul, discusses this. It says, and when you leave shul, you gotta have a business, you gotta learn Torah, and you also gotta do business, and don't get into a partnership with someone that might make you take on such a vow. But the censors took it out. So if you look at the tour, you want to see something interesting, take the tours that were printed up until 25 years ago, take the new tours, and you see you have two or three pages missing. But the censors just took out of our tour, out of our halachos. It's just not there. The Tur Beis Yosef, you have a whole section that they took out.
And the new one that's taken out?
In the new one, they put it back in. They got old printings. But the ones that they were learning from up until about 25 years ago, till the Shirat Dvorah came out, had this halacha. Shalu Talmidavet Rabbi Zeira, the students asked Rabbi Zeira, B'mei Rachta Yamim, to what do you attribute your longevity? Amar lehem, he said, Mi'amai lo ekpatti b'toch beiti. I never got angry at home. Could you imagine that? All the years he was married, they asked him why he got longevity. So he lived this long life, and he never got upset in the house. And I never walked before someone bigger than me. Bigger than me over here is in wisdom. And whenever I was in filthy places, I never had thoughts of Torah. I was careful not to think words of Torah in filthy places. And I never walked four footsteps without thinking Torah or without wearing tefillin. So I guess he was careful not to walk in filthy places, right? And I never slept in the Beis Medrash. I never dozed. I never slept a permanent sleep. I was never happy when my friend stumbled. And I never called my friend by a nickname that's a shameful nickname. And even others say it means even a nickname that the whole family calls him that. Shorty, Freckleface, Carrot Top, whatever it is. Even if it's a nickname that everyone in the family, that's what he's known as. I never used that either. Okay, so we have all these beautiful traits. We can try to emulate them, but like we discussed earlier, we gotta do it in moderation to remember our level. Mishnah, the Odom Arab Yudah.
What if we're just talking about like it's true, like Yitz for Yitzchak? Now that's a nickname, but it's not an insulting nickname. But our understanding is that all nicknames are considered a little problematic.
Or is it just like...
why do you say all nicknames are problematic?
I don't know. Well, actually, maybe it's just insulting.
Ketina, Harichsake, the Gemara brings us nicknames. Rabbah is a nickname. Rav is a nickname. Rebbe is a nickname. Ravina is a nickname. Abaye is a nickname.
So it's just insulting nicknames?
Would seem that way, right?
What about non-Hebrew names? Is that considered in the same vein?
I don't think so.
If the person is
whatever he wants. Respect his wishes.
But I think there's a Kabbalistic thing about not using nicknames. Just because it's not... The Jewish name has all sorts of... whatever you want to call it. Power, essence, whatever.
So Rabbi Bar Nachmani didn't know that when he nicknamed Abaye Abaye.
Don't ask me why... how this fits in with Gemara names, I don't know, but I'm just saying that I heard there's a Kabbalistic thing.
I wouldn't believe what you hear. Chod Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Ah, okay. If you heard it from a rabbi, fine. Chod Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda said, in the previous Mishnah, we had Rabbi Yehuda, right? Rabbi Yehuda said, you could sell a shul for the sake of a courtyard, and then the purchaser could do as he wishes. Furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda said, Beknes Shecharav in Maspidin Metucho. If you have a shul that was destroyed, you don't make eulogies in that place. Men mafshinin betucho chavelin, and nor do you use it as a place to stretch out rope. If you need to stretch out rope, so you need a large place. You don't say, "Oh, I got this free space where the shul crumbled. I'll use that." No, you don't do that there. Then posin betuchom tzudot, nor do you set out your traps there. Then shotrin agagot perot, nor do you spread out your fruits to dry on its roof. Then osin oto kapandalia, nor do you use it as a shortcut. Shneimar, the verse is vashimotit mikdeshechem. I will destroy your holy places. It doesn't say your holy places will be destroyed. It says I will destroy, and then it says your holy places, seemingly indicating I will destroy, and even after I destroy them, I call them your holy places. They retain holiness even in their time of destruction. Kedushatan af chen shomimin. Their holiness is retained even when they are destroyed. Alubo asavin lo itlosh mipnei ogmat nefesh. If grasses have grown up in the shul, you don't draw them out. You leave them there so that people are bothered by it, and then they remember, hey, that place. You see that place with weeds? Once upon a time, you know what kind of shul was in that churva? You know what kind of great place there was? And then people will be bothered by the sight, the unsightliness of the weeds growing in the middle of our posh neighborhood, and it will drive them to rebuild the shul, or it will drive them to pray that God will give them the capacity to rebuild the shul. Yes?
In Portugal, many synagogues were transforming into houses, private houses, with time. So it will be forbidden now to enter a private house?
No. That's the sugyot we saw earlier, how you could transform a synagogue into a private house. And those of you who are interested in working on your Hebrew and learning what we just learned and what we're about to learn, the halacha, just so happens that this morning in the Chayadim class that I give in Katamon, we did these halachas exactly, the halachas of this Mishnah.
You did this in
That's
so interesting, because I've been dying to ask you about this halacha. It's been driving me crazy.
So it's in Hebrew, and hopefully it'll be uploaded either tonight or tomorrow. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, you'll see. It's the latest chapter. It should be about chapter 16 or 17 in the Chayadim. Tanu Rabbanan. Batei Knesiyot Enogin Ben Kalut Rosh. When you have a shul, you're not allowed to behave in a light-headed fashion in the shul. Enochlin Ben. You don't just eat there. Ben Shotin Ben. You don't drink there. Okay, so here we have an important Rashi. Rashi says, when you read this Gemara, it says you don't behave in a light-headed fashion. You don't eat there. It says Rashi, velogasinan, and the correct version does not say ve'en ochlin bem, and you don't eat there. Because when we say you don't behave in a light-headed fashion, you don't eat there, you don't eat there is the beginning of an enumeration of details that all go under the heading of do not behave in a light-headed fashion in a shul. If it would say don't behave in a light-headed fashion in a shul and don't eat there, then there would be two different halachot, when in fact they are not. The heading is do not behave in a light-headed fashion. The details are don't eat there, don't drink there, etc., as we will continue. One little vav changes the whole meaning. If it would say vi'ein and you don't eat there, then it would not be an enumeration, but rather a different halacha. Here we see how careful we have to be with each letter as we read.
Does that mean that everything they're listing, only what they're listing is what is included in lightheadedness, or it's just some of the details?
That's a good question. It would seem that that which is listed. Enochlin then. That's a good question. So, halacha l'maisa, listen to the morning class. Enochlin men, we don't eat them. Then shutin men, we don't drink in them. Then neotin behin, and we don't use them to get all dressed up, to put on our jewelry. Then metalin behin, and we don't take strolls, tourist visits through the shuls. Then nechmasin behin, nechmal v'gshamim ibn al-shamim, and we don't go in there to get protection from the sun or from the rain. Then maspidim ben espet shelechid, nor do we eulogize an individual, but obviously the masses or someone who represents the masses, a Talmud Chacham, does get eulogized in a shul. Aval korin ben, but what do you do in a shul? You read Tanakh. Vishonin ben, you learn Mishnah and Talmud. Umaspidim ben espet shel rabim, and you eulogize a Chacham. You eulogize a Talmud Chacham. Amar Rav Yehuda, Eimatai. Rav Yehuda says, when is this so? And we have to know. Whenever Rav Yehuda says, Eimatai in the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda is coming to define the previous opinion and not disagree. But this is not a Mishnah. Rather, this is a Braisa. When you have a Braisa, so then when Rav Yehuda says, Eimatai, sometimes he will be defining the previous opinion. Sometimes he will be arguing with the previous opinion.
Oh, is that why they're able to say learn Gemara? Because I was wondering, like, how can they write in the Gemara to learn the Gemara? Because it wasn't finished yet. So how can you, like, be learning it if it's not even published? So
obviously, obviously.
But this is a Braisa that comes later.
No, there's a Braisa that comes earlier. Oh, but the Gemara... But the Gemara was compiled by God in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. It just evolved into this. Look at the Gemara in Brachas Hey Amar Aleph, and if you want, it's online.
But if it wasn't written, how did they sit around and learn Gemara?
The same way they sat around and learned Mishnah. They knew it by heart. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai b'Yishuvan. Rabbi Yehuda said, when are all these halachas relevant? When the shul is settled. Aval b'chubanan. But when the synagogue is destroyed, you let it be, and then you let the grasses rise in order that people will be sorrowful over the destruction of the shul. Now, asavin mandach shmayu. One second, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean? When is this true? When they're around, but when they're destroyed, let the grasses grow. Who was talking about grass? What's he talking about? When is this true? But then there are times that you do let the grass grow. No, you're right. There's a line missing from the Braisa. The Braisa should read that we also we honor them in that we keep them clean. And we put water to keep the dust down. So you ensure that there are no weeds growing there. You ensure that there's no dust flying around there. Because you don't want grass and weeds to grow in the shul. And to that, Rav Yehuda reacts and says, when is this so? That you ensure that no grass grows in the shul. Remember, their floors were dirt floors. The yishuvan, during the time that the shul is settled. Aval b'chubanan, but when the shul is destroyed, then you let the grasses grow. If grasses grow, don't pull out the grass, let it grow wild so that people will be bothered by it and they'll do something about it. Yes?
You said some synagogues they have floors?
The floors were dirt floors. Now, if you have a dirt floor. After construction, all their homes. Yeah, 90% of their homes had dirt floors. No one could afford a mosaic or a stone floor. So their floors were dirt floors. So what would they do? In order to ensure the dust doesn't rise, you know, you walk around your house, you're going to start having dust everywhere. So they'd sprinkle water to keep the dust down. And that's called malbitzin, like to knock down the dust. Amar Anasi, Patek Nesiot Shebe Babel Al Tnai Enasuin. Ravasi taught that when they'd make the shuls in Babylon, they'd have a condition. They'd say, we're not giving this the full sanctity of a shul, we're making a condition that we should be allowed to use it for other uses as well. And Afan Pikin, and even though you have this stipulation that should permit you to use it for mundane uses, and Nagin Ben Chalut Rosh, nonetheless, you do not do light-headed things in a shul. Umayniu Cheshbonot. What do we mean? Don't sit there and figure out your taxes. You need to put out all your paperwork and figure out how much taxes, or you have to talk to people and figure out what you owe. Don't do that in a shul. Amar Ravasi Betekneset Shem Cheshvim Bo Cheshbonot. Ravasi warns, a shul that's used for figuring out your calculations, you need peace and quiet. Where are you going to do it? Out in the field where the sun's beating down on your head, in your house where the kids are pulling at your shirt. No, you go to shul. There you have your tax consultant. Anyways, you meet him. You say, hey, give me a minute of your advice. So Ravasi warns us, if you do mundane calculations in shul, Ravasi warns that a shul that has mundane monetary calculations running in the shul, melilin bo et hamet, they will ultimately also use that shul for the mundane use of housing the deceased. What does that mean? Melinin sakadaitech, they'll leave the deceased there overnight. No, that's not the idea. Losagi de lav hachi. That's, it has to be that way. But rather what he meant to say is that people will die in the city and there'll be no one around to bury them. And then they'll have to house them in the shul. They'll be metei mitzvah. It's not that he's telling you, if you use it for this, then you should also use it for that. He's warning that if you do this and deride the honor of the shul, then the other things will... It's like a warning that the other things can follow. Obviously, if it's a cheshbin of a mitzvah, that's permitted in shul. We don't use it to beautify ourselves. The rabbis and their students, they could set their tie in the shul. They could do these things in a shul. Why do we call a beis medrash? Why do we call it the house of the rabbis? Because it is their house. That's where they live. They're there day and night. So if you're in a beis medrash, day and night, so you could eat there, you could drink there, you could sleep there. Then nichnasim ben bachamam nechma bakshamim imnagshamim. You don't enter a shul or a beis medrash to escape the heat or the rain. Ki had ravina v'ravid bar matna avukayim v'shalei shilta mirava. Ravina and ravid bar matna were asking Rava questions. Ata zilcha demitra. The downpour came. Aile lebei kenishta. They entered a shul to escape the downpour. Amri, they said, Aide ailina lebei kenishta lav mishumitra el mishum deshmaita bai tziluta kiyoma de istina. They said, we're not entering the shul to escape the downpour. It's not because of the rain. If we weren't busy learning, we wouldn't enter the shul. The only reason we're entering the shul is for the sake of the Torah. We're learning Torah. We're asking important questions. We're hearing important answers. And we can't focus. We can't hear the answers and be focused on them with clarity if we're out there in the rain. So it's not to escape the rain for our personal use, but rather it's for the sake of the Torah. For the sake of the Torah, we could enter. Amar l'ravacha b'rei d'rav l'ravashi, yitztich leilei nishnu mikrei gavram beken ishtamai. Ravacha, the son of Rav, asked Ravashi, if you got to call someone from shul, what are you supposed to do? You're not supposed to just walk in and out, so how do you do it? Amalei said like this, Itzubam Rabbananu le'mahilchata. If he's a sharp student, when he enters the shul, let him learn halacha. V'itanahu le'mamanitim. But if all he knows are mishnayas, so let him say a mishnah. V'ikra'u. But if he doesn't know that much, but he knows how to read psukim of Tanakh, le'ma psuka, so let him say a verse. V'ilo. And if he can't learn his own psukim, le'ma le'le'inuka e'mali psukach. Let him ask one of the kids. The kids were always in shul. That was the Talmud Torah. That was their cheder. They teach the kids in shul. The shul was where the kids learned. The adults learned in a base medrash. So ask one of the kids. Tell me what pasuk are you up to. Let the kid teach him a pasuk. Inami, or else if he can't do that, nishiputa v'nekum. So let him pause a little bit in the shul to show respect. He shouldn't just walk in and say, hey, Chaim, your wife's calling you outside. Your wife's on the phone. He shouldn't do that. Walk in, give your message, and then pause a while in the shul, sit down for a little bit, to show respect for the shul. Ideally, you should learn something. You can't learn something, so at least pause a little bit when you walk in. I think so. Must be the man, especially Rabim. Yes.
So we, does that mean if we have this situation, we should try and learn Allah instead of just recite a pasuk?
Why not? Isn't that what we just read?
Yeah.
Yes.
I read that also we should say first a pasuk or something related to the Torah and then give a message, because it seems that we're going for the message instead of going for God.
Okay.
So what should we do?
You're not going to trick them into thinking that you're not going there to give the guy.
Okay, if you want to meet someone just to say, hey, someone's calling you, you go there and you go out. You go there just to give a message and then you go out. But if you stop first and if you say pasuk or something...
Well, you can still do it after, because at this point, like, you're just doing it to make the most out of a not ideal situation. You're trying to make it better, right?
I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know. Sorry.
This going in and out of the shul, the only time you're not considered going in and out is when you've learned something or you've sat down for a second or something like that. I mean, going into a Beit Knesset and grabbing a book and leaving is considered, like, not right.
Same thing, yeah.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
You have to, like, at least, at minimum, you sit down for a second.
That's no, you could say a pasuk while you're walking.
While you're walking. Okay. So, pasuk sitting down, I don't know which one's better. I don't know which one's
easier. Seems like a pasuk's better, right?
No, I mean, I don't know which one's easier.
I think a pasuk, yeah. I do. I learn something as I come in.
But what about as far as calculations go? What if that someone comes and says, hey, I've got this higher arts role, whatever, on sale, very cheap. And are you supposed to go, can we put this off till after we leave? Or is that acceptable because you're talking about acquiring Torah?
Right, that's cheshbonot shel mitzvah. That's accounting of a mitzvah, yeah, I would think so.
They say not to, I don't know if we're going to win this later. They say don't use it as a shortcut, right? Is it considered a shortcut if there's another way to get there and yet you use the Beit Midrash even though you're going to sit down and say a pasuk in order to make it?
It's still a shortcut, right? Yeah.
That's right.
What if it's a longer way but you decide to go through just to say a pasuk or whatever?
Yeah.
You just want the chance to say something in the shul for a minute. Like, oh, I'll recite a real quick psalm in the shul.
I don't know. It's an interesting question.
I
don't know.
One question. The other day someone was saying that... just give an example. Here is also part of Beit Midrash. So if a person comes in from that door and then goes upstairs... he's not in Beit Midrash. Then he has a Sifriya, which is not Beit Midrash, but then he comes into the Beit Midrash. So, if a person leaves Beit Midrash in order to get it again, is that can we consider that coming in and going out, despite the fact that... you got my question?
I usually treat it personally as though it's going in and going out, but I'm not certain...
Suck that it was.
It's going in and going out. Okay, good. Who said it?
Us.
Okay. I respect him.
Yeah,
big person
also.
Okay. Tough. So we're out of time. You guys want to go 10 minutes overtime?
Yeah.
We'll start here. Yeah? Yeah?
I
don't know.
Yeah, I woke up kind of late, so I'll keep going.
Okay, umasfidin ben espet shel rabim. We said you eulogize the masses. Hechidami espet de rabim. What does it mean, eulogize the masses? The masses. Mach bi Rav Chisda kigon espet adikai bi Rav Shisha. So Rav Chisda pointed a finger, he indicated, he showed a sign like a hespit from someone in Rav Shisha's academy. He didn't want to say it overtly, obviously. He didn't want to indicate something like that, but he indicated as though someone from his academy, he's got such big students, that's a big hespit. Machvi Rav Sheshet kigon espeda dekai be Rav Chisda. Rav Sheshet pointed the other way. He said if there's a hespit that Rav Chisda's present, that someone from his academy, that's someone big. Rafram astadele kalate beve kenishta. Rafram when his daughter-in-law passed away, he eulogized her in the shul. Amar mishumika didi v'demita atu kuli alma. He said, you know, if it's my daughter-in-law, so because of her honor and my honor put together, you're going to have the whole city coming. So that's called the hesped of the masses. Rav Zera safte lehu Ravanan bevekenishta. So Rav Zera also eulogized one of the rabbis in Shul. Amari said, "Im shum yika didi, im shum yika didei, demita atu kuli alma." He said, "Be it because I'm the one eulogizing, or because of his honor, the whole city's coming to this eulogy, and that's also the honor of the masses. You do it in a shul." Reish Lakish safte lehu tzuba Ravanan dishkech barat Israel. Reish Lakish eulogized the sharp student who used to frequent visiting the land of Israel. Davitani hilchata b'chavtalet shurata, that he used to learn halacha to the students with 24 rows of students. Amar vaychas la'arad Yisrael gabra rabba. He said, "Whoa, the land of Israel lost a great man." Now, even though he was teaching mishnayos to the students, but he had 24 rows of students learning before him. So he said, "A big man passed away." There was a man who learned Mishnayos. He learned Sifra, Sifri, Tosefta, all the different brisos, but he didn't learn Gemara. He never learned by a rabbi. He only learned Mishnayos. Now, without the Gemara, you don't know halacha. So all you know is you know all kinds of quotes. But what do you do with all those quotes? You're stuck. Okay. Atu v'amulei l'Rav Nachman lispedei mar. They came to Rav Nachman and they said, "Rabbi, we want you to eulogize him." Amal, so Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, "Heichin ispedei, how exactly do you want me to eulogize this man? Haitzana demale sifri dechasar. Whoa, this casket filled with books that we lost. What's he worth? He's like a casket filled with books. That's not a rabbi. That's not a learned person. He never learned by a rabbi. He never learned Talmud. All he learned were quotes. He's like a casket filled with books. You know, he's like a guy that he's got a good memory. He can quote you every Mishnah, Braisa, Tosefta. Very nice. But he doesn't deserve any great eulogy. He never made it to any great level. No, he had a good memory. You have a guy who can quote a lot of things." Okay. Says the Gemara, "Tachazi, come look. We quoted a story before where someone didn't know anything other than Mishnah, and yet Reish Lakish in the land of Israel, Reish Lakish eulogized him, and Reish Lakish was a toughie in the land of Israel. Reish Lakish wouldn't let anyone talk to him in the marketplace unless he was the most honest individual in town. If you saw Reish Lakish talking to someone publicly, you knew you could trust that person. You didn't even need a contract with him, because Reish Lakish wouldn't let you say two words to him if he didn't know you were as honest as can be. That's how tough Reish Lakish was. And yet when they told Reish Lakish, the student who only knew Mishnayos passed away, Reish Lakish came and eulogized and said, oh, what a great man the land of Israel lost." And in contradistinction, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, he was considered the pious man of Babylon. The Talmud says, you want to know what's a God-fearing person? That's Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. He's from the pious men of Babylon. And when they come and tell him this man passed away, who knew so much, much more than the man in Israel, and he's supposed to be a chassid, he says, I can't eulogize a man like that. So the Talmud says, look at that. In Israel, the toughies in Israel, the so-called tough rabbi of Israel, who wouldn't talk two words to someone who wasn't meticulously honest, look at what type of person he was when he came to eulogizing someone, how soft and gentle, how he was, compared with the pious, the chassid of Babylon, which is Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, where the Talmud says, he's a Yirei Shamayim, you want to know God-fearing people? You see the difference between what Babylon breeds and Israel breeds. The kindness, the softness of Israel, where the toughies of Israel, so to speak, are softer than the softies of Babylon. That's the comparison the Gemara makes. Just as Bezalel was bothered, the Talmud says, "Tachazi, come look, ma ben tkifei darad Yisrael." What's the difference between the tough of Israel, Reish Lakish, who wouldn't even talk to Rabbi Bar Bar Chana in the marketplace? Even Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, one of the great Amoraim, wasn't big enough to merit having Reish Lakish talk to him in the marketplace. So he was the tough rabbi of Israel, and look at how he was willing to eulogize compared with Lechasidei de Babel, the pious of Babylon, which was Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Tanan Hatam. We have a Mishnah in Avos. Udishtamesh betagah cholaf. He who uses the crown of Torah will pass from the world. Tani Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish taught on this Mishnah. Zamishtamesh b'misha shoneh alachot. This is a reference to anyone who uses someone who learned just Mishnayos. If he learned Mishnayos, you got to respect him. Don't use him. If you use someone like that, that's called that you're using the crown of Torah. V'amar Ula, and Ula said, L'shtamish inish b'man detani alba, v'lo l'shtamish b'man dematni alba. Better use someone who learned four orders of Shas than someone who taught four orders of Shas. Ka'ad Reish Lakish, havez azil be'ucha. You have the following story. Reish Lakish was going down the path. Mata ultima demaya. He came to a big puddle. So he comes to this like a miniature swamp and he needs to cross it. Ata o gavra al kevea katve. Along comes a man, he says, Rabbi Reish Lakish, let me help you out. Lifts him on his shoulders and starts carrying him across this big puddle. Become avale, and he's crossing him through the puddle. Amale karit, Reish Lakish, as he's being carried by this man, says, Sir, have you learned Tanakh? Do you read verses of the Bible? Amale karina, he says, Yeah, I know Tanakh. Tanit, he said, Did you learn Mishnah? Tanina Abba Sidre Mishnah. He says, Well, four orders of the Mishnah I've learned. Amale pasaltalcha Abba Ture, you broke through the mountain of four orders of Mishnah, v'ta'ant bar Lakish katfach, and you're carrying the son of Lakish on your shoulders. Shadi bar Lakish b'mayim, throw the son of Lakish into the water. Reish Lakish says, "How could you be carrying me?" Reish Lakish is the chief rabbi. Reish Lakish is, come on, Reish Lakish. We all know Reish Lakish was, but he says, "If you learned four orders of Shas, what are you doing carrying the likes of me? Throw me into the water." He says, I want to serve the rabbi. He said, You want to serve the rabbi? That's why you're carrying me on your shoulders. He said, Okay, so then at least if you're going to call me rabbi, learn something from me. Rabbi Zeira taught the following halacha. Bnot Israel, henichmiru al atzman. The daughters of Israel took the following stringency upon themselves. Shafilu rot tipat dam kechardal. Even if they see the slightest slither of a drop of blood, where technically, biblically, if they just see a drop of blood and it's not the time that their period should be coming, so then biblically they would have to wait one day and then go to mikvah. And they took upon themselves the stringency that they treated as though they saw it at the time that would require them to wait seven clean days. And yoshvot alav shiva nikiyin. They wait seven clean days for that. So that's halacha. That's the custom that the daughters of Israel took upon themselves. You guys want to understand this better? If you do, we'll explain it, but then we won't learn any further in the Gemara today. What's the vote? You want to understand this better tonight?
I mean, in terms of what
the laws
saying?
Of Nida. Yeah, how all this works.
What do you think? What do you mean? Just the general laws of Nida?
Yeah.
We can finish and then do Nida next? Like, because there's only one. I've
already learned it.
Okay, so the vote is to move forward. Okay, that's good. I have classes online. We discussed this before. Tana de Elio. We have the following braisa from the Academy of Elio Anavi. Elio taught the following. Kol ha-shoneh halachot, whoever reviews halachos daily, muftach lo shu ben olam haba, he's promised he will merit the world to come. Shneimar, as the verse says, halichot olam lo. Al tikre halichot ela halachot. He who has halachot olam, who learns two halachas every day, olam lo, he will merit the world to come. Tanu Rabbanan, we have the following braisa. Mevatlin tamutu alotzat amet vilachnasat kala. We stop Torah for the sake of accompanying the deceased, taking the deceased to be buried, and the sake of bringing life to the world, joining a kala, celebrating, to accompany her to the wedding, to rejoice, to make the chasen and kala happy. Amru alav al Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Ilai. We have a brayse about Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Ilai in Avos to Rabbi Nosson. Shayam batel tamutra la'atzat amet lachnasat kala. He would stop the academy in order to go and accompany the deceased to burial and accompany kala and ensure that she gets to her wedding happy. When do we say that you stop learning Torah for these things when there aren't enough people there to do it without you? But if there are enough people in Mevatlin, then you don't stop your learning for that. How much is considered the proper amount? So here we have different numbers. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Inya Mishmedrav, Treisar Alfei Gavre Veshita Alfei Shipure. He says 12,000 men and 6,000 trumpets, 6,000 shofros. V'amilan, some say Treisar Alfei Gavre Uminayu Shita Alfei Shipure. That you don't need 12 plus 6,000, but you need 12, and out of the 12, 6,000 should be blown trumpets. Ula Amar, Ula said, Kigon dechaitzi gavar me'avula ad sicha. He said, the number of people so that you have a human chain from the gates of the city till the graveyard where you eulogize the people. You have to have such a large number of people accompanying him. Rav Sheishat Amar, kintinata kach netilata. Just like the giving of Torah is the taking back of Torah. Here you have a human being who had capacity to learn Torah, Tashmish Kedusha. Now it's been taken from the world, so you treat it like when the Torah was given. Manetinatav Shishim Ribo, just like when the Torah was given, you had 600,000 people present. Afnetilata, so too now that it's being taken back, a human being has passed from the world, Bishishim Ribo, you have to have 600,000 people present. Then you could say there are enough people, we don't have to go. Hani mili lemandekari vetani, when is that so? Someone who learned Tanakh, someone who learned Mishnah, but if he actually taught, then let le shiura, then there's no limits. You got to have as big a crowd as you can have. Okay, at the funeral. So okay, how we apply this halachically is a good question. Obviously, we don't spend all our days going to funerals, even though
posting up about how the original council of Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu was in memory. The funeral was really 100,000. Right. No, it's 200,000.
So
you think we're still 400,000 short anyway?
Look at that. You see? Okay. We'll pick up here Bezachem next week.